I mean, we're motivated by winning just as much as we are losing. I mean, we've won a national championship, and that's pretty motivating. You want to go do it again. We lost right here last year, and that's pretty motivating too. You know, as I always say, we just try to keep our dreams greater than our memories.
That was the irrepressibly folksy Dabo Swinney yesterday. He was talking about his Clemson Tigers, but maybe he was talking about all of us as we're trying to keep our dreams greater than the memory of this past year. That's right, 2020 is over. And what better way to celebrate than with the college football playoff semifinals? Today, can Ohio State exact revenge on Clemson for last year's semifinal defeat? Can Notre Dame hang with Alabama's high-flying offense? Hey, it's a new year, and anything's possible. Hey, everybody, I'm Ryan McGee, filling in for Pablo. It's Friday, January 1st, 2021, y'all, and this is ESPN Daily. Heather Denich, my friend, Happy New Year.
I am so excited to be joining you, even though it's virtual.
Heather Denich is ESPN's college football playoff guru, and she's been covering the sport for more than a decade. And by the way, in case you were wondering if the 2020 chaos was going to go away when the calendar page turned, the answer is no, because I'm hosting ESPN Daily, which is, I think, a sign that maybe the chaos continues. But I'm so glad you're with me today.
Well, thank you, McGee. Happy New Year to you, too.
All right, so 2020 is over. It's done, gone. And there's no better way that I can think of to turn the calendar page to 2021 than with the college football playoff semifinals. So, yes, we just had probably the strangest regular season of all time. But, Heather, I'm looking at this bracket, and there's nothing strange about it. This is as familiar as it possibly be. Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, Notre Dame. And let's start with tonight's game, which is a rematch of what I think might have been the best game of the 2019 season, Clemson and Ohio State. Do you agree with me about that matchup they had a year ago?
Oh my gosh, McGee, it was an instant classic. This is one of those games that you can just put on rewind and play over and over again and never gets old, because you're watching the first half and Ohio State's up 16-0 and it's kind of like, here we go again with another semifinal. And then boom, it turns into the Trevor Lawrence and Travis Etienne show.
And Lawrence, dot one, dumps it over the middle. Etienne in space. Etienne, 10, reads, touchdown, Tigers! A championship drive from the defending champs.
All of a sudden, the game is down to the final minute.
Second down, Fields, scans downfield, fires to the end zone. It's intercepted. Picked off by Nolan Turner. And the Tigers are not going to be dethroned tonight.
It turns into a 29-23 Clemson win, and that just sets the table for what we have going on now.
It's remarkable. And the history between these two teams is remarkable, even though, honestly, there isn't a whole lot of it. I mean, keep in mind, Woody Hayes, greatest coach in Ohio State history, he was fired after he punched a Clemson player at the Gator Bowl in 79. But before we get into all that, there's a huge question mark for Clemson going into this football game. They will be missing Tony Elliott, longtime offensive coordinator. He's out because of a positive COVID-19 test. And, of course, in typical Dabo fashion, he said,
I mean, we're well prepared. We've got a great staff. We're all part of it. And we'll find out. You asked me that after the game.
Heather, just how big of a loss is this?
I think it's a huge impact, and I don't think it could be understated. I mean, I think it's comparable to not having Trevor Lawrence in the first matchup against Notre Dame. And I think the places you see it most are when it comes down to crunch time. Tony Elliott he's such a part of that program and identity of that offense, because as you mentioned, he's been there so long, and not having him, it falls down to Tommy Streeter, the quarterback's coach. And, you know, this is an opportunity for him, but I certainly think it's significant not having Elliott. And I know that he will be on the Zoom meetings right up until he can't do that anymore. Obviously can't do that during the game, but trying to participate. And thank goodness, at least Dabo Swinney is saying that Tony Elliott is healthy.
You remember way back, it feels like a decade ago, but it was only like 2 months ago when we're asking coaches, well, how do you do this when you don't have a coach there? And now everyone knows how to do it because it's happened all year long. All right, so aside from missing Coach Elliott, a lot of familiar characters in this game from a year ago. That, of course, includes the head coaches. There's already some jabs being thrown between those two guys, as much as you'll ever get out of Ryan Day, head coach at Ohio State, but it starts with Dabo Swinney, as it typically does, and he created a little bit of a controversy when it came out that on his top 25 coaches poll ballot, he had undefeated Ohio State ranked all the way down in 11th. What's up with that?
You know, I was on Dabo's press conference when he gave this answer, and he was explaining this.
I didn't rank anybody who didn't play 9 games or more in the top 10. Nobody. It's not that they're not good enough. I just don't think it's right that 3 teams have to play 13 games to be the champion and one team has to play 8.
And he's not alone in this. Mike Oresko, the American Athletic Conference commissioner, I've spoken to at length numerous times about Cincinnati, and he stated the case as well. But Dabo went on a soapbox about this one.
Yeah, and I was at the ACC championship game, and prior to the game and after the game, it wasn't just Dabo Swinney that was already talking about, well, they didn't play enough games and should they be in the playoff. It also came from Brian Kelly at Notre Dame. All right, so I mentioned Ryan Day, head coach at Ohio State. He is certainly not Dabo Swinney when it comes to almost turning into a televangelist sometimes. You know, when he's talking to the media or certainly addressing stadiums after football games. But he did get in a couple of jabs of his own. He said yesterday he was happy that Dabo wasn't on the college football playoff selection committee.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty good. He was quick to bring up something that we've heard about privately from coaches for years about Clemson, which has been their ability to maybe have a little ESP when it comes to understanding what offensive play is about to come, particularly Brent Venables, a longtime and esteemed defensive coordinator.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of the best defensive coordinators in college football. And, you know, he does a great job calling the game, seems to always know exactly what the other team is doing in terms of plays that they're running each play. And, you know, seems to, you know, call the right defense into that play a lot.
So how much of a concern is this idea of sign stealing for Ohio State?
As you and I both know, spending so much time around the ACC, Ryan Day's no stranger to this. He was at Boston College coaching against Brent Venables, right? So,
yeah. Yeah.
Look, no one is accusing Clemson right now of being the Houston Astros. Sign stealing is legal. And there have been some coaches who have said, look, it's just like baseball where if you can pick up what the third base coach is doing and you know what they're going to do, you go ahead and do it. And if you're foolish enough to give away your signs, then that's on you. But I will say that regarding this, one of the biggest advantages Clemson has is the arsenal of assistants, graduate assistants, and analysts, and the money and the time and resources to put into something like this. It's unparalleled, and it's something that North Carolina, Notre Dame, use the sugar huddle, short and sweet, to try and counter it.
You said sugar huddle. What is a sugar huddle?
So I love the description of short and sweet, but it's when a player brings in a play from the sideline on every snap. And it's one of the ways that you can counter it with speed, with tempo, so that Venables doesn't actually have time to recognize the sign. And by doing that, you limit the chance that he's going to be able to figure out or have that spy. And, you know, one of the other things that teams have thought of doing is sending incorrect signals to try and screw him up and give the wrong sign.
All right, so the coaches have drawn their lines in the sand. But on the field, the story is going to be the matchup of the quarterbacks who might go 1 and 2 in the NFL draft. It's Trevor Lawrence of Clemson and Justin Fields at Ohio State. This is not the first time these guys have been ranked 1 and 2. Coming out of high school, they were the top two recruits in their class and played just down the road from each other. What's the history between these two quarterbacks?
You know, it's funny because I feel like Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence are so much calmer than the coaches as we talk about these storylines going through this, right? They're much more even keel and stick to the script. But yeah, you're right. They played high school about 30 minutes apart from each other in Georgia. And Lawrence was actually number two in ESPN. Fields was one, but they had the same recruiting grade and they didn't really know each other until a quarterback's coach around there named Ron Veal brought them together for workouts in 2017. And when you think about this, it's remarkable that they're lining up against each other, right? And Justin Fields stayed in Georgia, but you know, his freshman year, he was more on the bench and didn't get the playing time he wanted, while Trevor Lawrence was becoming the household name that he is today at Clemson. And so Fields transferred to Ohio State, and he was quiet and shy, and you know, Chris Olave had a knock on his door and say, hey, you want to come play some pickup basketball with us? And that was kind of the initiation to Ohio State. He was really lonely when he got there. And so here they are, different paths, and like you said, still 1-2 possibly in the NFL draft. It's amazing how they've really come full circle together.
Trevor Lawrence, I mentioned I was at the ACC championship game. He looked the best he's looked all season in that game. Justin Fields has struggled, certainly late in the season, including the Big Ten championship game. So what kind of impact do you think this game will have on their NFL draft status?
Well, I think particularly with Fields, this is one more audition for him to show that the past couple of games might have been an anomaly. When you look at what's happened over the last three games, 4 touchdowns and 5 interceptions, you know, he's got the arm strength, he's got the mobility, he's got all the tools it takes to be an NFL quarterback, but he's got to make the right decisions. And I think this is just one more opportunity for him to show that he can do that and sort of revert to the Justin Fields as in the early part of the season when he was one of those Heisman hopefuls.
So Clemson in high gear in the ACC championship game. Ohio State only has played a handful of games, and every time they seem to get some momentum, they lose it. Ryan Day, just yesterday, his quote was, "Full strength is a floating target right now." So I'm just going to just be bold here. Who's going to win?
Clemson's going to win. Clemson's going to win, and I don't know if it is going to be close. Like I said, I hope it is. But look, 45 points per game. The defense has been holding teams to 15 offensive points per game. They're so good. They're so complete. And we don't know how good and how complete Ohio State is. COVID-19 has disrupted their entire season and their offensive identity. Yes, they've played less games, but not because they wanted to. 3 games were canceled because of COVID-19. And so how good is Ohio State really? What we saw from Oklahoma, especially against Florida, granted a depleted Florida team, is the natural progression of a team from start to finish. And Ohio State is nowhere near having that opportunity. Can they skip 3 levels in the video game and get to championship level? I don't think so, but we'll see.
By the way, that's the mother of 3 boys that will immediately go to a video game comment there. And listen, I'm not good at math, but I do know that if you're averaging 45 points a game and you're averaging only giving up 15 points per game, that probably means you're winning all of the games. We're going to get to New Year's Day, the afternoon game, when we return from the break, and we're going to get super chromatic. A showdown between the bluest of college football blue bloods, the Crimson Tide of Alabama, and the Golden Domers of Notre Dame.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
This afternoon, the number one ranked Alabama Crimson Tide will take on Notre Dame in the Rose Bowl, presented by Jerry Jones. All right, for just the second time ever, the Rose Bowl will not be held in Pasadena. The first was in 1942. The game was moved to Duke because of World War II. This time, it's because of pandemic restrictions in Los Angeles County. But the game will be played at AT&T Stadium in Arlington, Texas. Before we get to the game itself, all right, Heather, you are our ESPN college football playoff guru. How close do you think Cincinnati or Texas A&M came to being in this football game?
I don't think it was close enough to consider it a great debate. I mean, they were considered. They were absolutely considered. But at the end of the day, everyone has to remember it's the full body of work. And while we get so wrapped up in the ACC championship game and the here and the now of how Notre Dame got absolutely smacked, the people in that selection committee meeting room still give them credit for that November win against Clemson, which is a top four win, and going on the road on a Friday and beating a top 25 North Carolina team. There doesn't have to be a convoluted explanation. For the selection committee, it was, we believe these teams are better, and their job is to select the four best teams.
All right, so you mentioned the win over North Carolina. You mentioned the win over Clemson, albeit without Trevor Lawrence, double overtime. But with all that, their first time in a conference playing in the ACC, they're still a three-touchdown underdog, Notre Dame is to Alabama. How did they stay in this game?
The way that they have won this year, one of the best things they do is control the clock. They are number eight in the country in time of possession, and they cannot be three and out. They have to hold on to the football as long as they can and keep Alabama's ridiculous offense that averages almost 50 points per game and 543 yards off the field. They have to win it up front like they did in the first game against Clemson. I was on Brian Kelly's press conference, and he said, this is an electric offense and scores bushels and bushels of points. So he knows what he's getting into, but I think the best way for them to win this is to get stops on third down. Notre Dame has been so good at converting on third down, but Alabama has been even better. They lead the country in almost 60%, so they got to get those stops and stay on the field.
So, Heather, a year ago, we were obsessed with, and rightfully so, Joe Burrow and LSU and what was statistically the greatest offense we've ever seen in the history of college football. This Alabama offense might be just as good, and talent-wise might even be better. They're averaging 49.5 points a game. Two Heisman Trophy finalists, Mac Jones, a quarterback, and Devontae Smith, one of the best wide receivers we've seen in years. Do you expect them to just be business as usual?
Yeah, I do, to a certain extent. But, you know, I think that Notre Dame, if it can take the blueprint that it used from Clemson the first time around when it stopped Travis Etienne and do the same thing against Najee Harris, it might be able to limit some of what Alabama can do, or at least make them a little bit more one-dimensional. Each of their last two games, they've allowed over 200 yards. Syracuse had 229. Clemson had 219 in the ACC championship game. They've proven that they can do it before, again, limiting ETN in that November matchup. But can they do it this time around? You know, again, it goes back to winning it up front.
Notre Dame under Brian Kelly, the floor has been high, but the ceiling has been completely out of reach. I feel like you could copy and paste that sentence about Notre Dame football into pretty much every season since 1988. And everyone goes back to that 2013 BCS title game when that game was over in 3 minutes. And that was the game they lost to Alabama 42-14. That game has always been the measuring stick. in my mind, a lot of times unfair because people think that's what Notre Dame is still. It's not. It's better than it was then. So how much of a measuring stick will this game be against Alabama on New Year's Day?
Well, fair or not, it's a huge measuring stick as an indicator of how far the Irish have to go to close the gap to get there. But that's what everyone faces when they play Alabama. And it's not necessarily fair. As long as Nick Saban is there, though, that's what it's going to be. And this is what we've seen in this playoff era is Alabama, Clemson, and everybody else. But I think Brian Kelly has done a great job in closing the gap. And he said this narrative, he doesn't understand why this narrative continues.
We don't listen to the narratives about what Notre Dame can and can't do. We're just excited that we're going to keep banging at this door and we're going to get through.
Well, it continues because they haven't taken the next step. They haven't won the national title, right? And we've seen those lopsided losses. And until that picture changes, even if you hang in there with Alabama, make it a good game, make it a close one. I mean, to me, I know there's no moral victory for Brian Kelly, but to me, that at least shows how you close the gap. The only game they lost this year in a god-awful COVID-19 ridden year with stops and starts was they lost to one of the top four teams in the country. Right. And that's something to be proud of.
So to that point, I'll let you go on this one. Clemson and Alabama making their sixth appearance. Ohio State's fourth appearance. Notre Dame now has been back. This is the second time. Is this process giving us the right teams? And is there any way to improve it moving forward? Because I would say that for the first time, and a lot of this is because it was 2020, but for the first time, people are starting to be very vocal and starting to get very fed up with, I'm getting the same New Year's dinner every single year.
So I will answer your question directly, which was, is this process getting the right teams? If you're asking that question in this system, the answer is yes, because you're getting the four best teams. If you're asking, is this system fair? The answer is no, because everyone who deserves a shot is not getting a shot. The committee, I think, is doing the best it can with the protocol and the task it is given at hand. How many people listening to this podcast truly believe Cincinnati is a better team than any of the four in there right now? There might be some. How many people believe Cincinnati should have a shot to have a Cinderella story, which college football does not have? Probably a lot of people. So I think those are two different questions and two different issues. Now, I have been talking to commissioners all week. Next week on ESPN.com, I'm working on a story about the state of the playoff and the health of the system. And I can tell you, Mike Oresko, the American Athletic Conference commissioner, said exactly what you said. He said it's stale. It is absolutely stale, and there would be more interest, especially in November, if conference champions were in this thing. He thinks there should be eight. I get a sense that nobody should rule out expansion before the end of this 12-year contract, but I think that there are a lot of hurdles. But I think that expansion talks are happening and will continue to happen.
You know me. I call it the Gang of Five, the non-Power Five conferences. You know, and this year in particular, I was Mr. Coastal Carolina. But I'm also smart enough to know, Heather, that even with a playoff expansion, the good news is that the Chanticleers will probably get into the playoff. The bad news is they're going straight to Tuscaloosa. That's just the system's always going to be rigged against them. Am I wrong?
That's a good question, because who knows what the model looks like? Who's to say that it is the, you know, five conference champions, one group of five. Who's to say it's not just the eight best teams? Then what do you have? You have Oklahoma and Iowa State and who else in ahead of Coastal? So, you know, you might be right, but no matter what you do, you still got to beat Alabama, Ohio State, and Clemson.
Heather Denich, thank you for joining us. And I'm assuming you need to go clean up your house after Santa Claus delivered presents to three boys.
Yeah, and I'll talk to you next year because that's how long it'll take me.
Coming up, in 2020, a barrier was broken in college football. and it's one that might inspire women everywhere who envision themselves making progress on the gridiron. Here's another voice we want you to hear. One of the biggest moments in college sports this year happened when Sarah Fuller took the field to kick for Vanderbilt.
Vanderbilt's Sarah Fuller becomes the first female to play in a Southeastern Conference or a Power 5 conference game.
Praise poured in from around the world, and it felt personal for so many watching at home. And that includes our very own Andrea Adelson.
Hi, I'm Andrea Adelson, and I'm a senior writer for ESPN. I always watched college football growing up. I sat with my dad on the couch, desperately wishing I could play quarterback. I even practiced spirals and played Dan Marino in neighborhood pickup games. But it was an unspoken rule that for real teams, boys played football and girls, we just didn't. So I found my way in by covering it and threw myself into sports writing at the University of Florida in the mid-90s. I kept an eye on any women who broke barriers in football. I so much wanted to know how it felt. Then, one day, I learned Florida coach Steve Spurrier had extended walk-on opportunities to several young women, mostly high school players who were prospects for the Gator soccer team.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Hearing Coach was about to leave on a trip, I snuck into the football office, knocked on his door, and, amazingly, he let me in. So I worked up my nerve and asked if it was true. "We've had a lot of walk-on kickers," Spurrier told me. Male walk-ons, he meant. "If it's a game where we're ahead, we allow them to go out there and kick one." Then, the words I wanted to hear. "So why not let female kicker go out there and kick one too?" So, 9 months later, I asked to punt with the team during practice for a column I wanted to write. He eagerly agreed, then coached me up as the other special teams players gave me dirty looks. Spurrier told me to ignore him, and also told the equipment manager not to pick up my terrible punts until they stopped rolling. Coach clearly wanted to send a message to his punters, who are averaging an awful 32 yards per kick. So he used me, a woman sports writer with no college football experience, to show them how they stacked up. Whatever he got out of it, I was giddy. For 1 hour, I was part of a real football practice. It's still one of the coolest experiences of my professional life. I called Coach this fall for a story on Florida star quarterback Kyle Trask. As we wrapped up the call, he asked, "Have you been practicing your punt lately?" Clearly, he had not forgotten. When Sarah Fuller kicked the ball, my eyes welled up in a completely unexpected way.
And here comes Sarah Fuller onto the field.
And I allowed the power of this one simple moment to overwhelm me. Yes, no cheering in the press box and all of that. But what Fuller accomplished meant something big. I'm now the mother of two girls, already talking about taking on the world with their headstrong spirit and courage. It showed what's possible for them.
Right through there!
And it took me back to that feeling on the Florida practice field when, for a fleeting moment, it was possible for me.
I'm Ryan McGee. This has been ESPN Daily. Our show is produced by Alexander Hyacinth, Mike Johns, Steve Martin, Ryan Nantel, Andy Tennant, Eve Tro, Chris Tuminello, and Aaron Vail. Special thanks this week to Jim Briggs, Garrett Lang, and Jackson Agello. Thanks for listening. Pablo will be back on Monday.